Introduce yourself, please.
Ron Reichman, State Representative from Olathe.
Ron, thanks for being here. This is a family business for you, and I'm eager to talk about that. But first, we're going to hear the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeh.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
And joining Ron and myself this morning in the KCUR production studio, Martha Lally from Westwood Hills, Kansas. Martha, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Sam.
And Celia Yopis-Jepson, who covers education for the Topeka Capital Journal and the hardest working education reporter in the state of Kansas. Celia, thanks for coming over from Topeka.
Thanks for inviting me.
We're going to start with a slightly different opening question today because with us is Ron Reichman Jr., which implies to me that there is a Ron Reichman Sr. So tell me about the political Reichmans.
Well, I do have the honor to serve with my role model, my father, and was able to watch him growing up in the many ways he served in our public. And a lot of folks thought maybe he entered politics early. He didn't. He entered politics about the same time I did. I remember giving my dad a call and saying, "Hey, Dad, today I decided to run for city council." He said, "Really? Today I filed for the school board."
Wait, you want us to believe that this happened without any discussion?
That's what happened. Of course, we kind of have like-minded and interest. And he was a government teacher for 29 years in Meade, Kansas, where I grew up as my government teacher. So we had a lot of discussions along these same lines. And so, yes, it was actually a quite pleasant and surprising phone call, I think, for both of us.
That's interesting. So, and now we'll roll into the regular State House Blend. And tell me about your kids and your pets.
Yeah, I've got three kids: Haley, who's a senior in high school; Chase, who's in the fourth grade; and Christian, in the eighth grade. We have a golden doodle, 5-year-old golden doodle named Duncan, and a little flop-eared rabbit named Dexter. And they get to run the house together and have lots of fun.
Whose idea was the rabbit?
I believe that was Haley's idea originally, but Mom, Kim, gets to take care of the rabbit and clean the litter box and take care of it. Haley had a great idea, and Mom gets to be the one taking care of it.
Well, you know what? That is always the way the world of pet works. All right, so I got a lot of questions, school funding among them. But before we get to me, we'll take our first trip around the table. Martha, what's on your mind for Ron this morning?
You know, number one, Sam, I think it's really great that you've expanded to both sides of the state line because that's a nice scope for people who live in Kansas City. You know, the metro area, I think, is really affected by both sides all the time. But as head of appropriations, I wanted to talk to you about the recent story that came out about the vendor who was in the state house who is whose business basically is in jeopardy because so many legislators, are getting a free lunch from lobbyists. I still find this really grating as a regular citizen that is still going on to the extent it is. You know, de minimis is one thing, but there is no free lunch, and those lobbyists are looking for something, and they are influencing the legislators to the point of where they're not even using the local vendors. It's just an avenue that's brought this again to light, and I really think it needs to be examined. So that's my burning question for the day.
Yeah, what's your thought on can you be bought for a lunch? No, they're not even hamburgers, I don't think.
No, they're much nicer than that.
Yeah, they're boxed lunch. So, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, a lot of the lunches that are provided during the daytime or more informational gatherings where you'll have anywhere from 10 to the 40 legislators talking about certain issues and being educated. And our time is very limited while we're there. We're running from one meeting to the next. And so to stop by and grab a box lunch and to listen to a presentation, you're kind of having a chance to work and eat at the same time. So I think it's been very productive. Obviously, we all love our snack shop and what Don means to the culture of the building. Mm-hmm. He's been there for 30, 40 years. A lot of the issues with Don's, and people are still fighting. I don't think this chapter is closed for Don and his snack shop. Folks are really wanting to find a way that he can stay there. But a lot of issues, in addition to the box lunches to legislators, has been the other areas of people moving out of the state house and going to other buildings and not no longer office inside the Capitol. And so he's lost a lot of foot traffic throughout the year, not just the time that we're in session.
Well, it begs the bigger issue of how much influence the lobbyists can bring by bringing in food. And it might not just be to the State House. It could be that to their offices. It really could be anywhere. But I think as a practice, it really should be banned. And I feel that way sincerely. You know, a stellar example of somebody who won't even take de minimis is Becky Lakewood, who runs the PA's office down at the Jackson County Courthouse. Her division won't even take de minimis because they don't even want to give a hint of an example that they might be taking someone, even a pencil or a coffee cup, from someone who might be influencing them. And I think our legislators should be held to the same standard.
Well, I think probably 9 times out of 10, the legislator probably can't name the lobbyist that actually purchased the lunches, the ones that we're referring to. And for us in appropriations, if we're working through the day and partly have to work through lunch, our office would contact a lobbyist to bring in lunch. And at the very end of the meeting, somebody might mention them if I remember who bought them. Sometimes we don't even do that. And so, again, I think it helps us so that we can continue to work through the day and be more efficient with our time that's spent there in Topeka.
Do you think it has and do you think you're tainted somewhat by the free lunch-a-palooza that happens in Jefferson City? It's a far different culture, of course, but I'm wondering if you get painted with the same brush.
Well, I do believe they have a lot of different lobbying laws and regulations, or lack of regulations, in Missouri, as we do in Kansas. And, you know, we have we are all responsible for our own votes and for what our constituents want us to do. And we all are accountable to the ones that sent us to Topeka.
Mm. Celia, what's on your mind?
Well, of course, the news coming up on Monday is the school district's applying for emergency aid or extraordinary aid. But really what I'm thinking about is more looking ahead at the next school finance formula. Mm. I interviewed Kansas has, of course, a new education commissioner, Randy Watson, and I interviewed him on Thursday for a story we'll be publishing on Monday, kind of asked him what's on his mind. And one of his main goals is to build a better relationship between the education sector on the one hand and lawmakers on the other. He thinks that he can kind of maybe help to bridge that gap, it sounded like, by I'm sure you know he's been conducting meetings around the state, gathering input from businesses, lawmakers, members of the public to try to get everyone on the same page. What do we want out of schools? I guess what I'm wondering about is it seems like there is this huge gulf, a lack of trust, it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on what the issue is there. But given that gulf between school districts on the one side and the legislature on the other, how do you bring people together to write a formula that will have buy-in and trust from school districts as well and educators as well? How is that process going to happen, and you know, who will be the driving forces in that, and when will it happen?
Now, that's a great question. And I think the what you talk about with meeting with Randy Watson is he echoes a lot of our same thoughts and feelings. One that I kind of discovered through the process was talking to a lot of superintendents and stakeholders is that lack of trust. And I think it's been going on for a while, both our stakeholders and our taxpayers, as well as the legislators. And so I think we're all guilty of that, guilty of not communicating, not listening. And so that's where it begins. We have to listen to each other. And I appreciate what Randy's doing, reaching out. And we're doing the same thing as legislators. In fact, we hope to kick off more of a listening tour soon that does just that. And we find a way that we find something where common ground is. And I think I'm hopeful that we'll find and that it's what's best for the kids, and we start there and then build from that.
I'm glad you opened the door to that. There's a couple of clips of tape I want to play, and then let's all talk about it on the other side.
We've had an increase in transportation costs of over $1 million. We have health insurance costs that continue to go up. Any piece of revenue will help accommodate those rising costs.
We've got to find more teachers. We've got to pay for more supplies, books, desks, other materials. We're probably going to have to do some additional transportation. All of that costs.
All right, that was the CFO from Olathe and the chief of staff in Kansas City, Kansas. Both spent all of last session telling the legislature that block grants were a bad idea and that we're not getting enough money. So when I hear everybody talk about listening to each other, it sure looked to me when I was in Topeka last session, everybody seemed to be talking past each other. So what do we got to do to, you know, to try to make it so that that you're hearing them and they're hearing you?
We'll start with the things that we did, we found in common with our block grant bill. And part of the time spent listening and talking to superintendents, we heard some themes. They wanted more flexibility. They wanted more local control. And they wanted more money. And I believe we accomplished all three. The last one wasn't at the level that a lot of districts wanted. And so, again, we're going to try to find ways that we can help them. We can help each other, help our students get a better education, and find ways that the money gets to the classroom.
Do you think there's more money, classroom money, in the future of Kansas school districts? Because, you know, what districts argue is put a lot more money into it. It's all going to capers. Most of it's going to capers. That's not a bad thing. Teachers want to have their pension. But as both, as you heard from the CFO of Olathe, that's your home school district. You know, they've had to lay off 80 people. They're coming to you asking for about $468,000 in additional funding. So from their point of view, they're not getting enough money.
Well, and earlier you mentioned about their support or lack of support for the block grant. And they were obviously being represented from Olathe. My district we spoke a lot with our superintendent and the CFO. And a lot of pieces that they looked for were in the block grant bill, along with the other superintendents that we spoke with. And they were much more neutral on it and much more appreciative of some of the flexibility that they did get. In fact, early on, the night of the block grant was released, our superintendent was at the school board meeting and said, we support the block grant. And so, but things can change and information can change. And we look at the numbers early on when the clip, I think you mentioned, was played. They didn't have all their numbers in yet. I'm not certain 80 people will be cut. A lot of those are frozen positions. They're not teachers. Some were aides to a Spanish program. And at the also time, they thought they're going to have 400 to 500 additional teachers, students, and it looked like right now they're showing about 115. And putting that in perspective, that probably is less than two per building.
Two additional students.
Yes.
Right. There's still, though, even though they've through attrition, they've cut some people, but they also cut some a lot of custodians. You know, I mean, these are folks that are making at best a middle class income, and now they have to go out and find jobs at a time where there's not an overabundance of jobs. And so when you go to the grocery store, you must see these folks, or you see them at community events. I know that you're on the Olathe City Council, so what your emails look like just must be awful. I don't know how you do it. So, what do you say to these people? Especially as Celia pointed out, you guys got to start working on a new school funding formula, because these block grants only take effect for 2 years.
Yeah, I'll address the last question first if I can. Unfortunately, a lot of this summer has been spent reviewing what we've done in the past. And I'd hope that we could be more proactive and start working towards the future formula and have more conversations about what we liked and didn't like about the old and what the new one should look like. And again, with the main focus of what's best for kids, and I think we all agree that putting money in the classroom, mm-hmm. what's best for kids. Currently, 53% statewide of the money that goes from Topeka and from our local taxpayers and from the federal government gets to the classroom. And so we've got to find a way that we can have a larger percentage of that get to the point where we can educate kids. And the first part of your question is that we also have to decide, what is the role of government? What is the role of education? Is it to educate kids, or is it to employ folks? And I personally would hope everyone can have a job and will never have an opportunity where they would have to be without one. But that's not my role as a legislator, is mm-hmm. to employ people. It's mm-hmm. in the fact when over half of our budget goes to education, we want to see that go to the classroom, and we want to see how the outcomes that kids can prosper. because that's what the money is being appropriated for.
Yeah. Martha, I saw your eyes light up when we started talking about education. You have some thoughts on this. And while you do this, I'm gonna need some more coffee.
Ron,
could you just pour that for me?
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking there's some collateral damage that goes along with the education issue because it's been going on for such a long time that you've got a report out a couple of days ago that Kansas and Missouri have the youngest teachers, some of the youngest teachers in the nation. And obviously that means they're also the least experienced, which tells me the teachers are not hanging around to get their retirement from the state of Kansas or Missouri. They're finding other jobs and they're going other places. So the quality of our teachers is suffering because of the situation at hand. It's really a multifaceted problem.
You have some concerns about the quality of teaching? I mean, the Kansas schools still do a really good job, but Martha's right. There are very young teachers, and these are the people who are going to end up being principals, associate superintendents. So do you have some concerns in that area?
Of course we want the best teachers possible to educate our children. And maybe Celia has the actual numbers or can be closer on it, but it seems like the average throughout time has been about 5 years. That's the point where someone early in their career decides this is what I'd like to do or this is not what I want to move on to something else.
Or I can't afford to do it anymore.
If all those things come into play in the person's own personal choice and how they want to have their professional career. And we all know that the best teachers are there for the right reasons and they're truly want to educate kids, and that's a lot of the reward. We also know they need to be compensated and that they have to be able to make a living, save for their retirement, and so there's a balance there.
Yeah. So you talk to a lot of teachers, a lot of administrators. I mean, are you running into that same issue, people saying, boy, my workforce is getting younger, I'm losing veteran teachers, I'm losing that experience. Are you seeing that in school districts or the people you talk to?
I have heard some similar things in certain areas. I don't know that it's linked to state issues. You have to keep in mind that district by district, there can be a lot of different local issues going on. So I can't say that I'm hearing some sort of pattern that I would link to state issues. But I don't know if I could return for a second to the finance formula.
It's a podcast. You can do anything you want.
Okay, well, thanks. I'll just cut this out anyway. No, I'm just kidding. The other part of my question on the trust issue would be as you're building the finance formula, I think that what I am hearing from a lot of educators is they're going to start watching that whole process extremely skeptically because what they think is the underlying problem is they don't believe the state's finances are stable. So I'm not sure that they're going to trust, what formula maybe comes forward. A big question that they have is, okay, so as we build this formula, is the funding going to be stable for it? At one point, this spring, the deputy superintendent for Topeka USD 501 called appropriations from the legislature an IOU because he said, we're not so convinced that the state has the revenue. So I guess, at what point would you say that the state's finances are stable? Are they going to be stable enough to write a formula that will be reliable?
Well, and I said over half the general fund money does go to education. That's obviously could be a concern. This year we look at our finances, and right now we're on track to have about $80 million of ending balance money, which over a $6 billion budget, 6.4, 6.3, is probably not ideal. So we'll still monitor that. We'll look at our sales tax revenue numbers as they're coming in and see after we adjust and adapt. But one thing is that, remember, towards the end of session, in fact, the very last day of session, we passed a bill in one day that said if the governor does allotments, which he would have to do under $100 million, that he can cut strategically from places except for K-12 and the judiciary. And so for this next year, when we say the block grant was stable, secure funding, we meant it. And the last day of session, we passed a law. And so if you noticed, you probably did, when the governor made his recommendations or made his adjustments about a month ago, K-12 stayed flat and was not reduced.
You opened up, you just mentioned judiciary, not in this particular, where I'm going to go with this, but as you know, there's the Gannon case hanging out there. The state Supreme Court is going to be hearing arguments on a couple of different aspects of that in the fall and then early into 2016. That could result in the Supreme Court coming back and saying anything. You know, they could ask order $500 million more put into education. Just over the weekend at the Democratic Party gathering, Paul Davis, who ran for governor, ran against Sam Brownback, said that he could see what he called a constitutional crisis, where the legislature just may say no to whatever the Supreme Court rules. You're going to have a lot to say about whether the legislature says yes or no to that. So is that hyperbole, or is there a chance that there's enough people in the Kansas legislature who might say no to whatever the Supreme Court says?
Well, I would say in my short time in Topeka, nothing's impossible. And we can expect anything to happen. But you know, I think it will really come down to what the ruling is and how it's worded and what the direction is. In my time, the ruling that came out, I think my second year, was reasonable. It basically said, if here's your law, if you're going to have equalization, you should fund it. And that's what we did. They didn't come out and say, this is the number, this is what we want you to appropriate, which I firmly believe the appropriations is part of the legislative process. Mm-hmm. We have a committee and we have subcommittees. We look at the balance of the entire the needs of the entire state and allocate appropriately, or the way the funds come in. Because when we give to one, we're taking from another, and that taking may be from the taxpayers. And so, again, it will come down to ruling of what the Supreme Court asks us to do or directs us to do. And so I'll probably wait and read it carefully and talk to colleagues to see what will happen. But it is, it's a wild card, and it's something that is kind of hanging out there. We're all kind of waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you must be starting to think about the session, even though we're in the dog days of summer here. And this could absolutely, it seems to me, throw a wrench into the appropriations process, which is something you're in charge of in the House when you guys come back in January. So I guess my question is, do you live in fear of Gannon?
No, I don't live in fear of Gannon. But again, I'll go back to the decisions we make. We balance out the needs of the state. And right now, we have social services that we need to fund. We have our correction system, our highway patrol. There's a lot of things that are very needed in the state that we fund government for. And so we balance that with everything, including K-12 education.
Yeah. All right. One final trip around the table before we say goodbye. Martha Lally, what's your final thought or question?
Pleasure to be here. It's a great show.
Great donuts,
and
isn't it?
A great donuts, a great station. We love KCUR. I'm representing my little city of Westwood Hills as a regular citizen. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
You don't often get the House Appropriations Chairman sitting next to you, so you got one more question for him?
Yeah, I really do.
All right, well, go ahead.
I feel like Kansans legislators left some money on the table when they didn't vote for the Mental Health Act. What was it called? The Excellence in Mental Health Act. It seemed like, what happened there? I mean, it seems like there are billions of federal dollars available for mental health, and we didn't pick up on it. Why didn't we go in that direction?
Well, because majority of my time is spent finding ways to spend money and not raise it. Lots of times federal programs, and I have not looked at the one you're referencing, it comes with a lot of strings attached and matches. But yeah, thank you for information. We'll definitely look at it.
Read up on that. Yeah,
it was
read up
on the KCUR website. That's where I pulled it off this morning.
Very good. Thank you for the information.
Sure.
All right. Celia, final thought or question for Ron?
Final thought, I'd like to say thank you for inviting me here, because I never get sick of talking about education, so I'm always up for it. Final question would be, what's going to happen on Monday? How are you going to deal with these 40 school district applications?
Well, thank you for that question. We'll continue reading the information that we've received and look at the actual needs of the districts and balance that out with what the requests are.
Outstanding. Once again, I leave this podcast a little bit smarter than when I began it. Martha Lally from Westwood Hills, thanks
much.
Celia Yopis Jepson, who covers education from the Topeka Capital Journal, thanks for coming over. Reichman Jr., to get to know you just a little bit better, we're going to end the program with your favorite song. What is it?
Well, see, as a father of two teenagers, I hear a lot of the current stuff. So I get a walkout song, like the opposite of a walk-in song.
You absolutely get a walk-off song.
That's awesome.
I like the way that sounds. In fact, we're going to start calling it that from now on, the walk-off song.
We can do the Eagles, the Stones, Rascal Flatts. You know, I'm going to go, you can't always get what you want, Rolling Stones.
Yep. Everybody's very excited about that. Everybody's very excited about that. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. Our friends over there on Up to Date, they make some room for us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. You on the Twitter? You guys on the Twitter? Oh, come on.
Absolutely.
It's a radio, so you have to speak.
When am I not on the Twitter?
Absolutely. You are very active on there. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. And you can follow my co-host, Brian Ellison. He's at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. Thanks for being here. See you next time.